Jackson gave me the news of a planet far away. And Colonel O'Neill will assemble a team that will try to save the day. Dr. Sam has a master plan and a science attitude. And the Jaffa Tube, he's part of the deal with his trusty Goa'uld. It's just a regular day at Stargate Command, and it might be hard to understand.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome
to Three Fresh Short, Unearthing the Stargate.
Hello.
Hello.
So, we are talking about one of my favorite episodes today. This is a really good one.
It is. It's a newly discovered favorite for me, but yes, it's good.
I did talk about this one in our Sam and Jack Shippers episode. We'll get into that. We also meet one of our favorite recurring characters that we have spoken to.
Yay.
I forgot. And then I was like, oh, bestie, I forgot this is your debut. So we'll get into that too. But I think we have an email. I want to find it.
We do.
And an Instagram message too.
Uh-huh.
That it was sent forever ago, and it kind of went under like a message request and not like in our regular message inbox. So please hold. I'm not prepared and did not have them.
Do you want me to pull up the Instagram one, or do you want me to pull up?
Yes, please, while I look for the email one.
Got it on it. Bum, bum, bum. The one from Craig?
Yes.
Okay. You still looking up the email?
Found it.
Okay. Which one do you want to do first?
We'll do the email one first. It's a little short one.
Perfect.
This was about our episode on spirits. From Charlie or engineering underscore, or I'm sorry, let me start over. Engineer underscore living on TikTok. Mm-hmm. So it's one of our TikTok pals.
Oh, hey, bro. Why did I not see this email? Oh, I love him. Okay.
Probably because I opened it right away because I'm neurotic like that. My notifications, you know how I am.
I do.
He said, hey, all, I think I may know what Sarah's remembering with the forearm gesture that she said looks familiar. So if you don't remember, in spirits where I was like, they clap their forearms together. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, like, it looked familiar. Could it be from the Keanu Reeves movie Constantine? That's what keeps coming to mind. And I actually rewatched this. You're totally right. I rewatched this not too long ago. The Next Generation episode, I believe, is Samaritan Snare. And it was the Pakleds who were viewed as being less intelligent in the episode, but later on found to not be entirely true. So I don't know, Rebecca, if you know that reference.
No, I'll have to look up the episode again, but it's that was what it was like. Something's triggering this next generation memory, but I don't know what episode. Yeah, I'll take a look at it and see.
Interesting. But
he also wrote in asking for our Discord. We will send that to you, although I can personally say I'm not very active on there. I'm sorry, but
I'm getting better in there. I've commented like once in the last week. I think we all went on a somewhat Discord. There's too much going on. I needed to remove myself from a few. So
yeah.
Anyway.
But thanks for writing in. I love any email that we get or any message.
Same. Okay. This one from Craig. All right. Hey, y'all. Fries. Howdy. Hope y'all are doing great. My name's Craig, and I've been following y'all for a while. You might recognize me from the TikTok sphere as Todd the Wraith. Hi, Todd the Wraith.
Yes.
Finally got a job at a local grocery store that has let me absolutely binge the podcast. I just finished the episode starring our sweet boy, Jonas Quinn. He is our sweet boy. I've been wanting to write in, but it just kept slipping my mind, so I'm writing on my break. Thought I'd share my SG story. I'm a 20-year-old dude from the middle of the Midwest and only discovered Stargate in 2018 during the middle of my senior year of high school. After just having a random memory of a Gmod map I played and was like, hey, I think that's from a show called Stargate. I should check that out. I fell absolutely in love with SG-1 and then managed to fall even harder with Atlantis. And hey, Universe is there too. It's been such a boost for me. SG sparked my love of chasing away ignorance through reading about other people's cultures to talking to folks I'd never encounter out here in the cornfields. Y'all have made me think even harder about all the episodes I love and some I don't. So thanks, Fries. P.S. Shout out to Cottage Trek for bringing me on to SG Talk.
Yay, love Cottage Trek.
Yep, P.P.S. We see your Discord, so we will add you. And if we ever need an Atlantis consultant, I'm your man. So nice. Love it. Thank you, Craig, for writing in. We are so appreciative. It's so nice. I love when our friends that we know so well through the TikTok world start kind of connecting with us on other platforms. Yes. It just gives another layer into, like, we're all people. We're not just these, like, avatars on a TikTok world, but it's actually, like, a community. Like, we're actually, there's purpose behind it. So I love this.
Yeah.
Love it, love it. So thanks, guys.
But yes, thank you for writing in, Craig. Again, we didn't see it right away because it went to, like, a weird, like, message place. Yeah. So I promise we weren't ignoring you.
None of us are just good enough with the messaging on Instagram, apparently.
We're not.
It's weird. They changed it.
It asks you where you want to put the thing when it's in the other thing, and then it's confusing. So, mm-hmm. Sorry. All right.
So, again, we are talking about season 2, episode 16, which is A Matter of Time. This is a Sam Carter episode. So, very biased.
That's 100% why I'm like, it's one of my favorites.
I know, you're just sitting back there like,
near and dear to my heart. Love her. Love this for her. This is also another episode where we don't really go to another planet. The whole thing takes place within the SGC. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the first time it happens. I'll have to look at the notes. I have it in my like discussion note that I have separate. So without further ado, let's just get right into it.
Let's get into it.
Let's do
it. So the episode opens up with some sweet 90s space CGI, and we see the birth of a black hole. Cut to a desert planet. We see an SG team, not SG-1, someone else. And they're running from something. And their words are distorted. And it's like slowed down and kind of weird. And one of them is saying, it's right on top of us. But we don't see what's chasing them. And I find that this tactic, and Rebecca, I'm sure you know a lot about this, like in filming, is used a lot to build suspense, and especially in monster movies. When you don't see the monster or the thing that's supposed to be scary, it makes it even scarier. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think of right away is the opening scene from Jaws. Mm-hmm. How terrifying that is. Mm-hmm. And you don't even see the shark. Just see the girl, like, it's scary. And there's some other movies like that too, horror movies that the suspense is built up and you barely even see the monster, the alien, whatever it is.
Alien so being scene, one, a really amazing example, the yeah, movie Alien.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's especially like, I don't know if you noticed this or because I was watching a podcast talking about the movie Alien. I think it was Angry Joe. And he was talking about like the very first time you see the alien is when it's up in the chains and hiding, and it's like, wait, was that it? Was that, like, there was no big reveal of, like, ooh, like, shot starting from the feet and panning up, and it's the, no, it was like,
nope.
Yeah, it was super fast, and you don't expect it, but you can't really see it that well, and it really subverts your expectations, and yep. I like having my expectations subverted.
There you go.
I've learned a lot in, like, a 2-month period about horror films and how those are made and the suspense of it, and yeah. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut, but it's interesting.
When you have a monster reveal in a movie mm-hmm. that's like a monster horror movie, it's usually at that point where that you're breaking the tension by doing a full reveal. So like mm-hmm. I notice when I'm watching those sorts of movies, that's when I'm like, oh, like I relax a little bit because.
Well, because now you know. Yeah, now you know what you're looking at.
Exactly. Yeah. So
another one that comes to mind is The Babadook. I don't know if you've ever watched that movie.
Yeah.
But you barely see the monster. And a lot of people, if you read the IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes reviews, are like, this movie fucking sucks. You don't even see the monster. It's not even that scary. And it's like, did we watch the same movie? You're missing the point.
Right.
Like that, it's not about the monster. It's about the subtext and what that represents. But that's another one that comes to mind.
Right.
So this SG team is running from something that we cannot see, and they're very scared. We cut to the SGC, and we get this most cutest interaction between Sam and Jack. And I just have the dialogue here.
Oh, you just so happen to have
just
it.
So
I was like, listen, I cannot not include this.
All right, I'm going to let you two, O'Neill and Carter, this out. This is all. I feel like this episode is like, I'm just going to be a cheerleader observer. This is all you guys.
All right. So I'll be O'Neill. It's like, look, I know I should know this by now. I swear it'll be the last time I ask. But these wormholes we go through, they're not always there, right?
No, sir. It could only form between two open gates.
What's with the worm part? The worm thing? I don't get that.
That's just a metaphor.
Right. I knew that.
Imagine the galaxy is an apple. We burrow our way through the apple like a worm crossing from one side to the other instead of going around the outside.
Okay.
Now, of course, the diameter of the apple is just a two-dimensional representation of space-time, and well, the hole isn't a hole per se, but an interdimensional conduit. Colonel?
Okay. I'll be all right.
Okay.
So I love this scene just because you're seeing their friendship build even more. I love the fact that, one, Jack is trying to understand everything. We love a man who puts in effort. He's trying to understand things. He's trying to learn and grow. And also the fact that even though technically he is her superior, he has no problem going to her and be like, hey, okay, what's the deal with these wormholes? What's the worm part? I don't get it. Like, he's comfortable enough with his masculinity and his ego to be like, girl, I don't get this. Please help me understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that reveals a lot about his character. And then I love the fact that Sam is just so eager to teach him and to help him understand.
I love how she starts out. And like, this is true for, like, I feel like anyone of this, like, mindset when you're super passionate about something. She was mindful in the beginning to keep it simple,
right,
bulleted, to the point, and then you can only hold that back so long, and then it's like, blah, 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 and yeah, like,
and she just got like, so excited and overwhelmed and like, oh, I just want to, like,
I love it, just total geeking out. I feel like that's what we do when we talk about Stargate with people.
Yes,
to some degree. We're like, yeah, it's this and this, and then da 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 da. So yeah,
and sometimes that happens in real life, and then I have to pull back and be like, okay, calm down. I'm scaring this person.
I don't want to weird you out. Like,
100%.
My kitty's coming to visit.
Oh, hey. Well, my kitty's knocked my whole microphone over at the very beginning of this episode. So
perfect.
Yeah,
she's
lovely.
Gonna try and go in her box.
Oh, go in the box.
They call it her bread box because she looks like a loaf of bread.
She loafs in it.
She does. I love it.
Okay.
I love it, love it. All right, so where are
we at? So I love that scene. Very cute, very adorable. Man's tapping, queen of my heart. So then we have an unscheduled off-world activation, and somebody makes the statement that SG teams 4, 6, and 10 are the only units off-world. Daniel is currently with SG-6 on some dig, so he's not even in this episode until the very end. He's just, I don't know what was going on with Michael Shanks that week, but he was not there.
Just busy.
And I was thinking, and I couldn't find anywhere I tried to look, I was thinking, because remember, the actress who played Sharae was pregnant and with his child. I was wondering, was that when she gave birth? But I could not find anything.
I don't know.
About, because we're still in that season. So I couldn't find
could
anything.
Be.
It was just a footnote of like, Michael Shanks was barely in this episode until the very end. So
interesting.
I want to know if anyone knows. You can email us
at 3FryShortPodcast@gmail.com. That's 3, the word, not the number. 3FryShortPodcast@gmail.com.
Please tell us if you know why Michael Shanks was barely in this episode. So The computer cannot decipher the GDO signal, and Sam tells Simmons to speed up the signal. They recognize it as SG-10. They open the iris, but nobody comes through, and the gate shuts down. And Jack, right away, he's all gung-ho. He's like, let's go. Let's rescue these people. Something's not right. Let's figure this out. But Hammond declines, and he's like, let's just send a MALP first. We don't know what's going on. We have no idea what's happening. So mm-hmm. I like the caution, General Hammond. Good call.
But it's interesting because they don't always have that caution. Sometimes he's like, go, go, let's get him. But yeah. This time, I don't know. Anyway.
So they lay the groundwork out that SG-10 was on this routine exploratory mission of P3W-451. There were no indications of any enemies, whatever indigenous life forms were recently extinct. So they were trying to figure out like what the scoop was with that. Mm-hmm. Hammond is playing it safe and he's dead set. He's sending them out first.
I think finding out that indigenous life recently became extinct on the planet is a good enough reason for Hammond to be like, nah, Mal.
That's fair. That's fair.
At least we forget the Broca divide. No, we don't want to bring back or like the crazy orb that stabbed O'Neill. Like uh-huh. Who knows what crazy shit we could bring back.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry, Tux is being Tux at the moment, so we're just gonna
it's okay. I don't know where
enjoy kitty cats in the background.
I don't know where Erky is.
Erky's around. Oh, look at her being a little
I love her. Loaf. She's like there she is. Hey, Loaf. So cute.
Hey, Loaf.
Tux is come on. He's gigantic. Erky is a very little slender man.
He's a big man.
Yeah.
Big boy. Wow.
Kitties. This is a cat podcast, apparently. Slowly taking over. So we find out that O'Neill recommended Major Boyd for this command. And he's like, if he's in trouble, I want to go help him. So he feels that responsibility of like, this is their first mission. I recommended this guy for command. And mm-hmm. like, if they're in the shit, I want to help them. That's like, I feel bad. So they send a MALP through, but the image comes back and it's red and blurry. And we have. So Sam tells Simmons to make mm-hmm. some adjustments. She's like, to do this, like fiddle with this, do that. And she says, sir, it's possible the image we're receiving from the probe has red shifted or distorted towards the infrared end of the spectrum. And then Hammond's like, well, why? And Teal'c's there. He's like, the same reason their code came through really like, slowly.
Teal'c having this like random like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Random like, space person knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the adjustment works, but what should be video footage looks like a still frame. Like it just looks like a snapshot. And Simmons confirms they've only received 11 frames of digital picture in the last 6 minutes. So I have some dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot. Holy shit. Okay. But there's a lot of science-y talk that I can't, like, I could not even try to begin to summarize.
I'll be Teal'c and Hammond because it looks like there's a lot of, wait, O'Neill and Carter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So start with O'Neill. The picture tells us everything we need to know. That team is in trouble, probably under attack. Permission to go in, sir?
Negative, sir.
What do you mean negative?
I'm sorry, Colonel. With all due respect, but if I'm right, we can't help them. Now, the camera may still respond to commands. See if you can tilt it up and give us a wider image. And he types the thing into the computer. I think I know what Major Boyd seems so afraid of.
So they adjust the map and they see what SG-10 is so afraid of. It's a black hole. And the frames, like the freeze frames that they see are very, like, they're very scared. Like, you can see on mm-hmm. their face, they're really afraid. They're running away. The one that you end up seeing, like, on the monitors is basically, like, Major Boyd coming right up to the map camera shouting into it. Mm-hmm. So Jack can tell right away they're super afraid. Yep. And Sam figured out why. I don't know like what kind of technology they have that can zoom so well, but they got a really good view of that black hole.
Mm-hmm. It went in real
yeah thing.
Here, let's read through this one. Okay, so Teal'c says it almost appears to stand still.
From our perspective, yes, but you have to remember that time is relative. As far as SG-10 is concerned, only a few seconds have passed. They're still trying to save themselves.
Hammond says, what will happen to them?
Well, sir, the time dilation is a result of the intense gravity, which is directly proportional to the proximity.
Captain?
Captain. Sorry, sir. Their bodies will be pulled apart by increasing tidal forces.
They did manage to activate the Stargate once.
Yeah, but from their perspective, it couldn't have been open for more than a second.
Have you seen a look at Major Boy's face? What does that say to you? So we see Boy's face appear to be one indicating desperation. Hammond looks at it solemnly.
Disengage the Stargate.
Sir, by some fluke of Stargate technology, we are witnessing something that the laws of physics say we can't possibly witness.
We are witnessing good men die in slow motion, Captain.
You're right, sir.
So they try to shut down the Stargate, but it won't disengage. There's a couple things here.
Hold on. Can we pause for a second?
Yeah.
Because your mic started sounding different. Can we note this time? Yeah. I just want to make sure it didn't cut it off.
Hello?
Because it sounds like you switched.
I keep moving it. I think I need to just not move it.
Does it sound okay now?
I think so. Mm-hmm. It just like started changing, like if it sounded, it's like switched, like it wasn't taking from.
As long as the Audacity is saying it's still the PNP audio device, you should be good.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, sorry. It just because it like started sounding way different.
I did not fiddle around with it.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, so Sam has this moment where she's kind of just like so interested in what she's seeing that she forgets the human aspect of it. And even because Adam was over here watching it with me when I watched the episode, and he was like, yeah, that kind of pissed me off that she's just like so disregards. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't think she I think she just forgot about it for a second. She was so amazed by what she was seeing scientifically that mm-hmm. she kind of had to be reminded by O'Neill of like, do you see what's happening? Like, great, cool science and all, but people are dying right before our eyes.
Yeah. But I mean, I get it, because she's like, we're witnessing something that the actual laws of physics say we shouldn't be witnessing. So yeah. That's throwing her for like a huge loop, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But nobody else in that conversation understands just how insane that is, you know? Like,
yeah. Also, this is a running theme throughout the entire episode where they ask Sam to explain something. She tries to explain it and they're like, get pissed off at her because she's not dumbing it down enough for them. And it's like,
accurate.
You wanted the answer. Like, she's giving you the answer. Sorry. You can't keep up with her. She's a very smart person. I can only imagine the frustration it is to be incredibly smart in a specific area and have to deal with people who are stupider than you. Like, just like perfectly honest, not
just
nothing
smart in
against
other ways.
Them.
Smart in other ways.
Right. Listen, it happens in all areas, whatever it might be, and being ignorant on something or not smart enough to understand something is not bad. Like, I couldn't understand any of it, but I can, like, it must be frustrating for people who are incredibly smart and talented to try and have to interact or explain something to someone who really is not on the same level. And mm-hmm. then they get mad at you. Like, you're getting mad at me right now because, like, I'm telling you the answer you asked for. Sorry.
Like, get smarter.
It
okay?
reminds me of when the pandemic first started and Bonnie, We were trying to like make our own hand sanitizer because you couldn't find hand sanitizer, right? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get through to her head that she couldn't just automatically buy the 70% alcohol and then mix it with aloe or whatever you're going to mix it with, because then it becomes less than 70% alcohol. And she was like, but no, why would it do that? I'm like, the solution becomes less than 70% alcohol. We're trying to do, I'm trying to math her and she's not
just not computing, because she's like, no, I'm, she's like, this is the 70%, why would it not be 70%? But it's like the combined mass, like you add it together
and it's less than, it will never be 70% if you add something else to it. So yeah, so I totally understand that struggle, like, and that immediately makes me think of that moment trying to explain to Bonnie how it can't possibly be 70% alcohol anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. Also that reminds me of working in customer service, because a lot of people can relate to this, but I would try to explain something to someone and they would get mad at me. Like, they'd be like, sodas are buy two, get two free. Why didn't it come off? And I'm like, well, you only bought two. Well, that means I got to go buy more. You bought the two. And you will get two for free. The two that you are going to get now will be free. Yeah. You are not paying. Like, it's so, I don't know how else I can explain this to you to make you understand it.
I can't.
So it's like that, but like with astrophysics.
Yes.
So
Same thing.
That'll be a running theme throughout this episode of Sam explains something and people get mad at her for not explaining it to them stupidly enough.
Dumb it down.
Yeah.
All right, where are we at? Okay, so they attempt to shut down the gate. Is that where we're at?
Yep.
Yep. So then on the surface of Cheyenne Mountain, we get our wonderful stock footage of Cheyenne Mountain. Yes. A soldier named Cromwell is asking a sergeant how long they've been out of contact with the facilities. And the last communication was 4 hours ago. And it sounded very distorted, like the batteries were dying in their Walkman, a very 90s reference. Cromwell and his team begin entering the base from a back door, like shaft, like it's like an escape tunnel, but they're going down it.
Like a manhole.
Yeah. Like, it's this weird, like, entrance exit used for emergencies. Hammond attempts to use his fancy red phone to call the president, but he can't get through. And Sam is being a girl boss in the gate room, giving orders and trying to figure shit out. So here's another piece of dialogue. We have Carter and Hammond. Take it away, guys.
Okay.
General, I was just on my way to report, sir. The capacitor should have fully discharged by now, but somehow the gate is drawing power directly.
Isn't there supposed to be a theoretical time limit to how long a wormhole can be maintained?
Perfect. Yes, sir. We just passed it.
Well, then how is this possible?
Well, since time is passing more slowly on P3W451 relative to Earth, we're experiencing a paradox the Stargate was never designed for.
So this is the first time in our reality, at least, that they mentioned that theoretical, like, cutoff time for a wormhole of like 33 minutes or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The first time we heard of that was in the alternate reality episode. Mm-hmm. So now it's canon in our reality now, too. When they look at the event horizon of the wormhole, it looks like it's starting to swirl, kind of like a cool underwater tornado. Yeah, like a drain. Yeah, exactly. It looks really cool.
Do you ever have those tornado tube things like that you put between the two bottles and you swirl it around? Yeah, it's like that. That's what it looks like. You put food coloring in it and make it fun. Yep.
Yeah. Fifth grade science class.
Yes.
So Simmons, our pal Simmons, remember, he's the one that has a crush on Sam. He's in this episode a lot. He says, beg your pardon, sir. It seems we've lost contact. We've lost communication below sub-level 24. So Hammond leaves to try to get into communication with him. He's like, I got to figure out what's going on. Like, this is weird.
He's like, I'm out. I'll be back.
Yeah. So O'Neill, like, with his great stupid ideas, he's like, what would happen if we just pulled the plug? Have we tried unplugging it and plugging it back in?
But I mean, it's a smart idea.
And she didn't think of it. You know, that wasn't something she thought of. So Jack and Siler go to the electric room to start pulling the breakers. And nothing works of, like, the little ones that they try and do, like, specifically, like, oh, this one powers the gate and this one powers the whatever. Like, none of the little ones they do work. So they pull the main plug. Jack and Siler pull the main breaker simultaneously. The lights go off and then feedback of power sends a current through Siler. This is one of the first of many times where this poor man just cannot catch a break. Power surges around the gate as Teal'c looks on, and then current electricity begins to spark around the gate power mechanisms. Teal'c is on the ramp and he dives out of the way. He does get hit with like a bolt of electricity. It's very dramatic. And ultimately it did not work. The gate is still powered on and they can't figure out how to shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
So even with the power cut, the gate still won't shut down. And Jack is like, how is this possible? And Sam deduces that it's deriving energy from the black hole itself.
It's not terrifying. It's like, at all.
It's only one of the most destructive forces in nature we could ever imagine.
And she's going to use it seasons down the road.
Yes. Dun, dun,
dun. So Sam goes to the gate room to help Teal'c, who has big ol' electrical burns. Smoke from the fires seem to be wafting through the wormhole. Like, it's like sucking it in. Mm-hmm. So Sam orders Simmons to close the iris, even because he's like, it's an outgoing wormhole. Like, nothing can come through. But she says, except for the gravitational pull of the black hole, that can still come through. And there's this really cool scene where she takes her dog tags off and like she holds them up and they're like getting sucked in, which is like, girl, I don't know how hard it's going to be to get replacements. You do work for the military. I feel like things move really slowly there. Also, Boyd on the other end, like, who knows? Like, they just come flying through and like smack someone in the head. They're like, what the fuck, man? Like, we're trying to get through and they're throwing dog tags at us. But wait, no, it's what
I
it
never
was,
thought about
was
that.
It out? Yeah, it was outgoing. So yeah, she could send it through. Yeah. So they're probably like, what the fuck, man? This is bullshit. Hitting me with dog tags.
I never thought about that.
So what do we got? Oh, yes. Hammond is on the way. He's in an elevator on the way to the main level. And this is when we meet our bestie, Major Davis.
Yay!
Yay!
We're so excited to meet him.
Oh, my goodness.
And I love him because he is someone from the outside. Normally, the people we see from the outside military, like, you have Mayborn and you have, was it Samuels? He was in, like, the season one finale. Kinsey, like, all of the people outside the SGC government military are kind of assholes. Major Davis, though, is a very competent dude. He knows what's going on, and he's not like a baddie or something. Like, he's like, I'm here to help you guys out, man.
Yeah. All right. So who wants to be Davis? Because I'm going to be Hammond.
Rebecca?
I'll be Major Davis.
Yeah.
Sorry, right. Colin Cunningham. I'll do my best.
Yes. All right. What the hell's going on? Who are you?
Major Davis, sir. I'm with the Office of the Joint Chiefs. If you'll come with me, please.
What are these men doing in my facility?
We were under the impression that there had been an alien incursion, sir. A special forces team had already been sent down before we understood what was going on. If it's all right with you, sir, I'd like to brief you on the way to your aircraft. Time is of the essence.
We've got an emergency situation, Major. I'm not going anywhere until I talk to the president.
He wants to talk to you personally, sir. Your aircraft is standing by on the tarmac. It is urgent that we leave immediately.
Lead the way.
So it was funny when Hammond said lead the way because he's like, oh, shit, okay, someone's got their act together. All right, cool. Like, I love to see it. He's so used to dealing with, like, Mayborn sneaky bullshit and whatnot. So he's like, all right, cool. Say less, girl. I'm coming. Cut to a corridor because while Major Davis is gathering General Hammond, Cromwell is still trying to enter the base as well. And poor Doc Frazier is running to assist Siler and Teal'c and all their electrical burns. And he literally just busts through a wall. Like, they like have a torch. They're like welding a hole in the wall to jump through. And he just busts through and accost little tiny Dr. Frazier.
Oh.
And he like puts her up against the wall and asks to see her dog tags. And he thought that the base was overrun by alien hostiles. So he's like, I need you to lead me to the gate room. So go, girl. Like, go. She's like, well, I was on my way there anyway. You're kind of holding me up, dude.
She's just like, fuck off.
So back to Air Force One, Davis and Hammond again. So you guys want to read through that?
Sure. Yep.
We were hoping that someone such as yourself would come back up and confirm our hypothesis. We now know that the SGC is experiencing what is called time dilation. Time is quite literally passing slower within the facility than it is topside.
That would explain the communications problem.
Yes, sir. We also know that there are only two things, according to relativity, that would cause this effect. Velocity is near the speed of light or extreme gravity.
Approximately 10 minutes ago, we established a wormhole to a planet at or very near the event horizon of a black hole.
Since time is more or less at a standstill on the other side, you've been unable to disengage the Stargate. That was our hypothesis, sir. Keep in mind, we've had a few more hours than you to have to think about this.
So it's pretty cool because, like, mm-hmm. him and the team down there are still, like, trying to figure out what's going on. And people who are topside, so to speak, have, like, we'll tell you what's happening. Like, we know more at this point. We've had a couple more hours to figure it out. Go away, Ergie.
Yeah, and sorry, like, my cats, for the last, like, 5 minutes of this podcast, you'll probably have heard, like, cat scratching in the background. Uh-oh. Tux has been annihilating the post right behind me. So sorry, listeners, but that was just a cat.
Just some ASMR in the background. It's fine.
Exactly. It's all good.
So we go to the infirmary. Sam, Jack, and Teal'c meet up there because Teal'c's getting his electrical burns treated. And there's this rumbling sound. It sounds like an earthquake going through the SGC. And right away, Jack looks at Sam. He's like, Carter?
Gravity waves. Colonel, I assume that the wormhole itself would insulate us from the black hole's gravitational field, but it seems that our space-time has begun to warp just like on P3W451.
Will you stop that?
We're in trouble, sir.
Thank you. Think of something.
Again.
So I was like, first of all, yeah, again, he is getting pissed off at her for explaining things. And then he's just like, figure it out. Like, clearly cannot help you. Please just figure it out. So Jack runs into Fraser and Cromwell. And Jack knows who he is immediately. And you can tell they have a history. Also, side note, flashback to the episode Prisoners, where we find out that Jack was in a prison before. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what we learn from this. Mm-hmm. So just remember that.
Okay. You want me to be Cromwell then? You guys keep up? Okay.
Captain Carter, Colonel Cromwell. He's come here to rescue us. I wouldn't count on it.
Pentagon was concerned you were under alien attack when we lost contact.
How long ago was that?
A little over 5 hours ago. Why?
My watch reads 1330 hours. What does yours say?
Running slow, Captain. It's almost 1900.
Damn it. Colonel, I have to get off this level.
So we also hear Simmons over the PA system. He is in the gate room. They're in the control room. Mm-hmm. And he sounds distorted. So they can see it happening before their eyes.
Keep your distance, Lieutenant. Sir, for some reason, the warping of our space-time seems to have been in advance of the gravitational field rather than as a result of it. It's probably a lensing effect generated by the Stargate itself, but I can't be sure.
And then O'Neill, like, smiles and nods, and Cromwell's like, don't even pretend you understood that.
The point is, sirs, time is passing more slowly down here than it is outside the mountain.
Time is time.
No, sir, not according to relativity. Now, with the intense gravity field of something like a black hole, time actually slows down.
We're not in a black hole.
Not yet.
But we are connected to its gravitational field through the Stargate, and it's expanding in this direction like a bubble slowly extending outward. That's why I have to leave, sir. I have to contact the Pentagon and try to find a solution before the gravity field extends beyond the gate room.
I just came from there myself, Captain. Colonel Cromwell, I believe. General Hammond.
You came from Washington, sir?
There and back again. After someone upstairs managed to explain what was going on to me, we called an all-night session with the President and the Joint Chiefs. I've been gone nearly 18 hours.
I thought you were on the phone.
It means the time dilation is getting worse as the field expands.
That's the consensus. We've set up a command post directly above, right on top of the mountain, to monitor the expansion.
I have to get up there.
The experts we consulted believe we're going to have to commence an auto-destruct sequence to destroy the Stargate itself.
Sweet.
They assure me that the gravity field now present around the gate will help to contain the blast within the mountain and pose no threat to the civilian population.
With all due respect, sir, I don't think so.
If we don't try, we lose the planet right through that.
We may well succeed in destroying the base, sir, but leave the gate and the wormhole intact. What happens to the planet then?
Orders have been given at the highest level, Captain. It is our duty to carry out those orders.
But, sir...
The decision's been made, Captain. Don't forget those people up there have been working on this a lot longer than you have. It's what they came up with.
Yes, sir.
So, of course, when all else fails, let's just blow it up.
Yeah, sure, why not?
And as Sam says, okay, yeah, you might destroy the base, but the wormhole and the Stargate may stay intact. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it does nothing. It's going to help nothing. So the stakes are high. Like, if even the self-destruct will not help it, what are they going to do to figure out how to shut this down and stop Earth from being sucked through a black hole? So Jack and Cromwell agree to stay to initiate the self-destruct. Again, very okay and casual with the prospect of dying. I don't think they intend to stay when the self-destruct goes off. They just need to, like, give themselves enough time to get out. But still, it's kind of like, sure, I volunteer. I'll stay and make sure I blow the base up. Hammond evacuates the rest of the base. And when they reach the surface, Hammond is told he was gone for 22 hours. But to him, it was 20 minutes. Mm. So this time dilation is getting worse and worse. So 20 minutes inside the gate room is now like 22 hours on the surface. And it's such an interesting, strange concept, because at the end of the episode, they'll explain how long it really has been. But this whole concept of time is relative is mm-hmm. super interesting when you see it play out of like, I was gone for 10 minutes and like a whole day has passed pretty much. So we have some more dialogue because Sam is explaining timey-wimey stuff.
Yeah, we can go through this.
Timey-wimey, let's go.
Timey-wimey, mm-hmm. let's do it.
Well, sir, accounting for time spent coming and going, I would guess that time within the SGC facility has slowed to an average of about 600% below normal. When you ordered Colonel O'Neill to wait 5 minutes, you were really telling him to wait 6 hours, maybe more.
Captain, relativity gives me a headache.
So,
again, you're right. I hadn't thought about it. And now that we're like reading through it, it's like, man.
Mm-hmm. But at least he understood what she was saying at that part where, like, he didn't make her dumb it down for even more.
Right.
He was just like, man, this is bonkers. I can't keep up. So in the control room, you have O'Neill and Cromwell, and you can tell that their relationship is strained. Jack is like, he's not a fan. You can tell by how he talks to him. He says, Henry Boyd was a good officer, smart, kind of reminds me a little of Carter. This was their first mission as a team. So add insult to injury. Not only did he recommend them for this command, it's their first mission. So he's super bummed about it. And Cromwell's like, he looks scared to death. And O'Neill says, he's on a planet that's about to be swallowed up by a black hole, and he knows it.
Yeah, so terrifying.
It truly is terrifying. Back on the surface, this was a super cute scene that I overlooked before between Sam and Teal'c. And it made me think back to all the episode, like particularly with his family and how, Rebecca, you talked about how in those episodes, Sam didn't really have a role because the way he interacts with his wife is so jarring. He can't really interact with Sam because they have a really good, it would have just not made any sense. So you see him interact with Sam here, and it's super nice and sweet. He approaches her and he like touches her on her shoulder and he's like,
what do you guys want to read through it?
Yeah, do you want to do it? It's just Sam. It's Sam and Teal'c.
Yeah, you want to be Teal'c? You need to be Carter?
Yeah,
you can be Teal'c.
Okay, I'll be Teal'c. All right, perhaps with rest the answers will come.
Hey Teal'c, you know anything about quantum gravity?
Nothing.
Apparently neither do I.
What do these equations represent?
Probably a life's work. I don't have that much time, unfortunately.
How may I be of assistance?
We're experiencing a time dilation in a radius wider than the gate room itself. Most of the SGC, in fact, and it's expanding. But it's all happening in advance of the gravity field that's causing it. Now, according to everything I thought I knew about relativity, that's just not possible.
Yes, it is so.
Right. I mean, if it wasn't, we'd all be pulled apart by now. You know, they're proceeding with a plan that makes assumptions about gravity and space-time with absolutely no regard for the fact that it completely contradicts our observations.
I see.
In other words, Teal'c, they don't really know what the hell is going on, so they're just going to blow it up. There doesn't seem to be a damn thing I can do about it.
So kudos to Teal'c, because while Hammond and Jack are like, stop doing that, explain it to me like I'm a kindergartner or whatever, like however they like get pissed off at her, I'm sure Teal'c does not understand everything she is saying.
No.
But he understands enough, and he's just letting her talk it out. And he's there. He's like, okay, you're saying that it's not possible, yet it is so. And like he's just that soundboard for her, and he's helping her by just being there and letting her talk it out and get her ideas out. And he doesn't need to understand quantum physics. He doesn't understand quantum physics, but he's there and he's supportive, and we love that energy.
Yep,
we love it.
Good job,
Teal'c. We're here for it. Good job. All right, so like now
we're back in the control room. And we just get Jack a quick cut scene.
Yep.
Yep.
What was the cut? Oh, yeah, yeah. They're getting ready to set the self-destruct. So we have Sam and Hammond talking again, and let's just read through it. I know I have a lot of dialogue here, but there's
I like it, though.
Okay.
Yep.
As long as it works.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it, guys.
It's Hammond and Carter. Okay. I take it you still believe our plan isn't going to work.
To be honest, sir, I'm afraid that the gravity field will dampen the effects of the explosion. We'll lose the SGC, but the wormhole will be intact. What's left of the mountain will collapse into the wormhole. 6 months after that, the state of Colorado. 6 months after that, at least Daniel will live out there. We'll live on out there.
If you're wrong, and for once I hope you are, we can restart the SGC with a second Stargate at Nellis, and in time we...
Wait a minute. Sir, that's it. We do use a bomb, but we focus the energy of the blast. When Colonel O'Neill and I were sent to the Antarctic Gate, it was because we were under enemy fire.
It caused an energy surge.
Yes, and that energy surge caused the wormhole to jump from one destination to another. And she holds up a donut and motions to the hole. If we can channel enough energy in the direction of our Stargate, it should cut the connection with the black hole and cause the matter stream to jump to any gate along the way.
Leaving our Stargate connected to some other world.
Yes, sir. But then all we have to do is shut it down. Sir, we have to stop Colonel O'Neill.
So Sam's getting the most out of her food analogies. First it was the apple.
We got a donut.
Now it's a donut. So we have a solution. We got to use a bomb, but in not a blow up the whole Stargate kind of way. But let's try and redirect this wormhole to jump to another Stargate. Mm-hmm. And I like that they're calling back. I like the continuity of remember when this happened in this episode and remember. So they're pulling back from what they've learned before about the Stargate and expanding on it even more. Back in the gate room, we have Cromwell and O'Neill. Mm-hmm. So let's read through this because we find out more about O'Neill's backstory and why he's such a hater for Cromwell.
All right. I'm Cromwell. All right. We used to be friends, Jack.
Yep.
I was sick to my stomach when I found out you were still alive. I wanted to go back for you.
Why don't we just do this and get the hell out of here, all right?
Somebody dropped a dime on the incursion. You got hit. You went down. I made a judgment call to save the rest of the team.
And I saw you take off. And I saw 4 months of my life disappear in some stinking Iraqi prison.
I thought you were dead.
You thought wrong. What do you want? You want me to forgive you? Is that it?
Yeah, I guess I do.
Well, that's tough. What happens if nobody gets left behind?
And points at the monitor. Well, what about him?
That's totally different scenario.
That is the same damn thing, Jack.
So we learned that the time that Jack was in prison was because Cromwell ended up leaving him behind. Mm-hmm. And Jack has the whole mentality of we don't leave people behind. And Cromwell points to Boyd and his team. And he's like, what about them? And he kind of has a point. Mm-hmm. He really does. So it just stinks because there really is nothing they can do. And maybe at the time Cromwell left Jack behind, he thought he couldn't do anything else either.
Yep. It's tough.
there are times throughout the series that they end up leaving people behind, but because it's not a main character, it's like the one that comes to mind is I can't remember his name, but it was when Lantash took over his body.
Oh yeah, the young guy.
Yeah, he was.
He was one of the new recruits.
Yeah. And they end up leaving him behind. And Sam is like, listen, you don't want a pep talk. Well, you knew what you signed up for. And it's like, really? Like, you're going to really? When it's not, I don't know. It's kind of annoying how it applies to certain people, but not others.
Mm-hmm.
So in the control room, we see that the windows are shattered and the glass is pulled toward the wormhole. So the gravity is now pulling on stuff in the control room and pulling it in, and that glass is shattered. It was really cool. And Sam comes in to tell them not to set the self-destruct, and she tells them the plan with the bomb. So again, for O'Neill and Cromwell, it was less than 5 minutes that she was gone, but she was up there for hours.
It's wild.
We have this great scene. Love this. So let's just read this. Teal Cromwell, Carter, and O'Neill.
I'll just be Teal Cromwell.
All right.
Cannot the bomb be detonated by remote?
It has to be set a certain distance from the gate and at an exact angle. The timer can't be set until they're into position because of the variance in time dilation.
Man, she is
way smarter than we are. I know. So this was super cute because Cromwell was probably going to say something not cool. But we have O'Neill coming in, sticking up and kind of putting that out right from this jump.
After the entire episode of all of them just getting frustrated and angry at her for explaining science. Now he's finally like, yeah, she's way smarter than us.
Don't be nasty. Don't be nasty. Because Cromwell was probably going to say like, man, like she hot. Oh, shit. All right. Mm-hmm. And Jack was like, not the right time.
Nope.
So we see O'Neill and Cromwell, they're sliding horizontally along the rope. So it's like they're going down, but they're like it's horizontal because of the gravity pulling them. And the bomb is being guided through the window of the control room towards the gate. Carter and Teal'c look on intently from the gate room as Siler's feeding rope through the window. So it's like rock climbing or like to the 10th degree.
But for your life.
You won't fall and hit the ground. You'll fall into a black hole.
Yeah, terrifying.
From behind, so the iris is still covering the gate, but we see a shot of it from behind, and it's just like the swirling vortex. It looks really cool. And again, it reminds you of like the tornado in a bottle.
Yeah.
But then, so the gravity is pulling things from the control room. We see like chairs start to slide. And the iris is sucked in and it crumbles and it's like sucked in like it crumbles like tin foil and it's sucked in. And then you get to see like this swirling vortex and it look again, terrifying. It looks really cool, especially for the time, the era. You know, I didn't think it looked terrible CGI wise.
That's true. It holds up. It holds up.
Yeah. Where we are. And then we see more glass from the control room breaks, but this time O'Neill and Cromwell are down there. So
they do that trope of like the why that like Cromwell's line is like slowly cutting away, which is another like really common suspense building thing. Like, oh, the rope's about to break, you know, they do that with that like glass that it's rubbing against.
And it didn't look, I wasn't convinced that that little piece of like that shard of glass would be enough to cut that line. But
if it came fast enough at it, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's rubbing against the glass.
It was like stuck.
That was stuck. But yeah. I think if you take into account probably how bad the gravity is pulling, which would probably make it the rope want to like snap easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So also, you know, they're not only is their rope getting cut, but they are there and Jack and Cromwell, like Jack's arms are all cut up from the glass and eventually Cromwell's line is cut. So now mm-hmm. he's holding on to Jack. And he knows that if he keeps holding on to Jack, they're both going to get sucked in. And he lets go.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls into the black hole. So that's kind of like him making amends of, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get us both sucked into this. So this is me like trying to make everything up to you. And as soon as Jack arms the bomb, Sam, Teal'c, and Siler begin to pull him in, which because of the gravity, he's one guy, but it's taking all of them to pull him in.
And that had to be still, heavy as fuck.
Yeah. You can tell that it's super heavy and they're barely making any progress, but we see the bomb explodes and everything fades to white. So you don't really know, did he get far enough away?
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Did they succeed in their plan? So fade into the infirmary. Daniel finally shows up in this episode and we find out that the plan worked.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this scene where Daniel says, well, it might be a little difficult to accept, but since you reported for duty yesterday, 2 weeks have actually gone by. And Jack says, 2 weeks? I think I'll sleep in.
Oh my gosh.
And that was the episode.
It's such a good one. And sorry, Ryder just came home. Come here, give me a hug.
Hi. Hi, sweetie. I missed you.
Yeah,
Ryder was gone in Ohio for the weekend.
Oh,
so
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, that was a good, like, I love this episode. Hey, sweetie. But anyway.
I like how science-y this episode is. Like,
yeah.
It makes me happy, all of Sam's like science talk. And it tracks like the gravity and everything. Like if you look up black holes and time and relativity mm-hmm. and everything, it all tracks. So
yeah. So for my like themes and discussion, I don't know if any of you saw this, but there's an astrophysicist on YouTube, Dr. Becky, and she did a video where she reacted to this episode of Stargate.
Oh really?
Yeah, I watched it. She wasn't like, obviously she was critical, which is her job.
Sure.
Like, she knows this stuff. So she pointed out where things didn't quite make sense, like the red shift of the mm-hmm. the image, where she kind of like, okay, yes, that's a thing, but it wouldn't work like this. So it was interesting to hear her perspective, and she actually enjoyed it. She did an episode where she reacted to a Star Trek episode of The Next Generation with something like that. I'm not sure which episode it was, but it was super interesting. Highly recommend that if you want that perspective. But
Becky, Dr. Becky.
Yep. Dr. Becky.
Cool.
On YouTube.
Nice.
So, but some things. Yeah. So some other things that I have, some fun facts. Uh-oh.
Christina had to go.
Oh, okay. I see now. So some fun facts that I have. Sergeant Siler gets his first of many injuries he receives throughout the series in this episode.
So
when
this
he gets
is actually the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yep. This is a fun one. There's a scene where Captain Samantha Carter is offered a donut while trying to figure out the black hole scenario. Amanda Tapping actually got her start in a fairly well-known TV commercial for Tim Hortons back in the late 80s. This is the first of multiple donut gags in the series where a character are offered yet decline the fried pastries.
Yep. Nice.
So she's like, oh, I'll pass on the donuts. Thanks.
Yep.
I mentioned this before. This is the first time the 38-minute window is mentioned in this reality. So I don't know if you were aware of this. I was vaguely aware of this. But in 2003, MGM granted Fandemonium a license to produce Stargate SG-1 novels in the UK, Australia, and New Zealand, and South Africa. Fandemonium's publication rights were also extended to North America in 2006. So basically, you have like legitimately published fan fiction. There mm-hmm. are novels out there of Stargate that MGM, like it's legit. So author Sally Malcolm wrote two books, A Matter of Honor and The Cost of Honor, that feature efforts by SG-1 to save SG-10 from the black hole using a ship and stolen anti-gravity shields 5 years later. They succeed in rescuing all but one of SG-10, who is incinerated by the heat from the sun before they can escape.
Oh.
So if you didn't know, I don't know if it will be considered canon, but in these novels, they actually are able to go save 3/4 of SG-10.
Nice.
So when you think about it, like, time is still slow. Like,
yeah,
time has barely passed. So it's been 5 years, but they're still like living in that one moment, which is kind of horrific.
Mm-hmm.
But they were able to go back and save them. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. That makes me feel a little better because, like,
yeah, like you get some closure.
Yep.
That you didn't get from this episode.
Yep.
After Hathor and Politics, this is the third episode in which SG-1 are not seen to travel through the Stargate. So we have, again, it's like that on base only type of feel where they don't go off world.
Yep.
And then Michael Shanks only appears in the final scene of this episode and also only has 2 lines of dialogue. He is mentioned to be off world, but I still can't find the reason why. So, again, I want to know. Tell me.
I think your theory is probably pretty decent. Like
something about
the kid or.
Yeah.
Something. Because they probably shot that like 2 lines of dialogue when they were filming like another episode or something. So he was probably gone right. for that whole time that they were filming this episode.
Right. And it makes me think of the X-Files when Gillian Anderson had her kid. She only missed technically 1 episode.
Yeah.
The way they filmed it.
Yep.
And like how they brought her back or like that one episode she was laid up in the hospital the whole time and barely had to do anything.
Yep.
So it is possible for them to be gone for a pretty long time and technically only be gone for 1 episode.
Yep. Yeah, they can be smart about the shooting schedule, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then as far as themes go, this one made me think, like, the enemy or the bad guy in this episode is nature
yeah.
and science.
Yeah.
They're fighting against something like a black hole that has no malicious intent. It's not trying to be bad or kill them. It just is what it is. And it made me think of this Instagram page that I follow called Nature is Metal. I don't know if you follow it.
I've seen that, but yeah.
It's really intense. And some of it's very graphic and violent. So if that's not something you're interested in or that doesn't sit well with you or triggers you, don't follow it. But it's a very harsh reality that you have to, like, that nature is completely uncaring and sometime, you know, that thing gets eaten.
Mm-hmm.
That like it's very jarring to see. And a lot of the time they'll put a caption of what happened to this animal here or what the scenario was. And this they ended up dying or like they actually survived. Like, so it's interesting to see how nature and science can be so unforgiving and almost cruel, but it's not purposely that way. That's just how things are.
Yeah.
That's just how nature is. That's how science is. So the fact that they're fighting against the forces of nature and science, it seems like a very unstoppable and unmovable force, but they were able to figure it out, at least in this scenario.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, O'Neill, especially at the beginning of this episode, is like a lot of people in that, like, think about like the pandemic and how mm-hmm. it was hard. It's almost harder to rally everybody around fighting like an invisible thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, O'Neill's like, we got to go in. We got to save them, blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
the guns aren't going to work this time. We have no person to be fighting or even like creature to be fighting. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, interestingly.
It's truly a different feel because, again, you think of like big, bad, whatever, like aliens, or even if it is an alien that has no, they're apparently, like, they're very, you know, they don't care. They're unfeeling. They're mm-hmm. just pure evil. At least there's a face to it
mm-hmm.
and they can personify it in a specific way. Whereas science and nature and like a black hole, you can't be mad. Like, it is what it is. You can't mm-hmm. be mad at it and trying to reason with it. There's no amount of reasoning or negotiating you can do it. You just have to figure out how to beat it with better science.
Yep. True that.
Yeah.
So do we have anything else for this episode?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Did you close the iris last time?
Oh, God, I don't remember. I don't think it was
closed
me, but
two
I
ago.
Who it was.
So.
Christina's skipping out.
I know.
I don't know if it's her turn or not. Man, I was trying to remember. That way I can prepare something.
I think you did. I think you closed it last time. Pretty sure.
I don't think so, but I'll do it again. And okay. My idea is you pull some cool techno shit and just slow it down and make it really slow, like I'm getting sucked into a black hole.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. I can do that.
All right, guys.
This is me officially closing the iris.